Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Happy 4th of July. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Well, today is a big day of celebration in so many different places. I think I've mentioned before that I wasn't born in Ithaca, New York. I was born in Endicott, New York, but it's very close by. And I lived a good deal of my life in Ithaca. All my kids were born in Ithaca. And both of my brothers were born in Ithaca. So it's got some sentimental value for me. And because most of my life I worked in hospitality and owned a bar in that part of upstate New York. So I have a lot of friends in Ithaca and some family members. So they're having a weekend-long celebration. And this morning on the internet, everything is, you know, popping already, if you'll excuse the pun. They are all talking about kicking off the whole weekend today with a big horseshoe tournament and barbecue, and there were fireworks last night, and there'll be fireworks today and tonight, and all weekend long. It's called the Ithaca Townies Festival, and I got my invitation a while back, and I am disappointed that we couldn't make that happen, because I think we would have enjoyed that completely. Ithaca is a very eclectic town. Ithaca is where Cornell University is, and Ithaca College, and it sits right on Cayuga Lake. But I think one of the interesting facts about Ithaca is way back in the day, it was the original Hollywood. It's where a lot of original old movies were made. It's incredibly scenic, Ithaca. Gorges and hills and waterfalls, and it's just natural wood areas. In the fall, I don't think I've ever seen anything that can quite compete with the beauty that you see in that part of the world. So I hope all of you that are listening to the show today. I have a few listeners in Ithaca. I hope you all have a great time. Please be safe. Remember, that's what the 4th of July is all about, making sure that we stay safe. So have a great time and celebrate with lots of gusto. Wish I was there. I am going to bring Shelley in, and then we're going to talk about a little bit of history of the 4th of July before we get into the recap show. I never realized some of these things. It's funny how you know parts of history and not all of it. So, good morning, Shel.
Good morning, Rainey.
How you doing, honey?
Doing good. Happy 4th of July to you.
Thank you. Same to you. Same to you. Are you still engaged today with other stuff, or are you going to be able to meet everybody at the
I'm still engaged. We're kind of like all over the map today, so it was just too difficult to put that in the mix. I didn't realize that when you and I were talking, that the 4th of July was Friday and that all these other things were happening. I was just thinking about the get-together, and we had family stuff going on, which I didn't connect the dots when we originally spoke.
Yeah, well, I can relate to that big time. So, but that's disappointing, because everybody will be disappointed that you didn't make it over. So it'll be fun, because a lot of the people we haven't seen in a while.
I know. I
but
agree.
I thought this was interesting, because I didn't know this. Variously known as the 4th of July and Independence Day, July 4th has been a federal holiday in the United States since 1941. See, I thought it went back to 1776, and it has a connection there. But it's been a federal holiday since 1941. But the tradition of Independence Day celebrations goes back to the 18th century and the American Revolution. the era of 1775 through 1783. In June of 1776, representatives of the 13 colonies then fighting in the revolutionary struggle weighed a resolution that would declare their independence from Great Britain. On July 2nd, the Continental Congress voted in favor of independence, and 2 days later, its delegates adopted the Declaration of Independence, a historic document drafted by Thomas Jefferson. From 1776 until the present day, July 4th has been celebrated as the birth of American independence, with typical festivities ranging from fireworks, parades, concerts, and more casual family gatherings and barbecues. So I love this. I thought to myself, you know, part of that, like I said, I knew, but not all of it. So it was fun to read some of that. It also talks about when the initial battles in the Revolutionary War broke out in April of 1775, a few colonists desired complete independence from Great Britain, and those who did were considered radical. Well, there's a word we hear a lot today. By the middle of the following year, however, many more colonists had come to favor independence, thanks to growing hostility against Britain and the spread of revolutionary sentiments, such as those expressed in Thomas Paine's best-selling pamphlet, Common Sense, published in early 1776. On June 7th, when the Continental Congress met at the Pennsylvania State House, later Independence Hall, in Philadelphia, the Virginia delegate Richard Henry Lee introduced a motion calling for the colony's independence. Amid a heated debate, Congress postponed the vote on Lee's resolution, but appointed a five-man committee, including, these are some pretty well-known names, Thomas Jefferson of Virginia, John Adams of Massachusetts, Roger Sherman of Connecticut, Benjamin Franklin of Pennsylvania, and Robert R. Livingston of New York, to draft a formal statement justifying the break with Great Britain. John Adams believed that July 2nd was the correct date on which to celebrate the birth of American independence, and would reportedly turn down invitations to appear at July 4th events in protest. Adams and Thomas Jefferson both died on July 4th, 1826, the 50th anniversary of the adoption of the Declaration of Independence. Well, now that's quite a piece of history, isn't it?
Yeah, that's actually kind of coincidental and ironic.
Interesting. On July 2nd, the Continental Congress voted in favor of Lee's resolution for independence in a near-unanimous vote. The New York delegation abstained, but later voted affirmatively. On that day, John Adams wrote to his wife, Abigail, that July 2nd will be celebrated by succeeding generations as the great anniversary festival, and that the celebration should include pomp and parade, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations from one end of this continent to the other. On July 4th, the Congress formally adopted the Declaration of Independence, which had been written largely by Jefferson. Though the vote for actual independence took place on July 2nd, from then on, the 4th became the day that was celebrated as the birth of American independence. So, you know, it's a funny thing when you think about people like this, and if you've ever watched any of these old documentaries where they have actors portraying Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin, there was a lot of pompous behavior. There was a lot of, these men were all writers at heart, I always thought, because if you read some of the things that they write, of course, back in that day, writings were very flowery, and I don't know, the whole verbiage was, I don't know, for us now, kind of archaic, but it was very descriptive. Well, like the way he describes to his wife about, you know, what they would do. You know, I think that's kind of funny. And let me see what it says. Festivities including concerts, bonfires, parades, and firing of cannons and muskets usually accompanied the first public readings of the Declaration of Independence. Beginning immediately after its adoption, Philadelphia held the first annual commemoration of independence on July 4, 1777. While Congress was still occupied with the ongoing war, George Washington issued double rations of rum to all of his soldiers to mark the anniversary of independence in 1778 and in 1781, several months before the key American victory at Yorktown, Massachusetts, became the first state to make July 4th an official state holiday. You know, every time we read old stuff like this, and then in other shows we kind of evaluate some of our big problems. Do you see how many times we read the things that we struggle with today were so embraced back in the day? Like alcohol, for instance, like shooting of guns and having muskets. And, I mean, you know, you look at the Wild Wild West and things like that. During that time, all the things now that we want to abolish were like it was the way of the world. It's
the
amusing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, like when you go back to the Wild Wild West, I mean, nobody really wanted to be a lawman because lawmen they weren't respected. You know, a criminal would come in and just shoot them. They didn't care. You know, mm-hmm. You know, you look at killing a police officer today is a major crime. You know,
mm-hmm.
But back
mm-hmm.
then, you know, it's like well, half the time you couldn't find the people that did it. You know. But it's just the difference, you know, you watch these old Westerns and you just see the lack of respect for, you know, except for law-abiding citizens, of course, you know. But back then, criminals really weren't afraid of the law because it didn't have the power that it does today, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
how the local governments can get the federal governments involved, you know, because you can get in touch with somebody in a millisecond on a cell phone. Back then, half the time, you couldn't communicate with even the state next to you or the town next to you, you know. So it was everybody lived in their little tiny worlds, and anybody that came from the outside in were considered invaders. And, so it was very, very different world. Everybody was very suspect and very private and very communal. And so on one hand, the community attitude was better because people would rally together more. But it also led to some of what we see today with prejudices and fears when somebody that looked different from the community came in. They weren't always embraced. A lot of times they were feared. So you can go back to history and see when certain things that are prevalent today kind of got spawned, you know, kind of
mm-hmm.
got started in our past.
It's true, but it's and I realize that it's a journey, you know, from things
oh, yeah.
like the Wild Wild West and the taking of land and farming and squatters and enforcing laws. I mean, you watch an old cowboy movie and what was the name of the town that everybody talked about where Boot Hill was, where all the bad guys were buried and everything? What was it? I can't think of it, but
oh yeah, I know what you're talking. I'm drawing a blank on it too. I guess you
yeah.
and I both talked.
Well, that was kind of a long time ago, but it is interesting. And if you read, you know, true stories, you know, like even going back to when Lincoln was shot. I mean, the stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It's an interesting time, and yet the things that we're fighting against right now, the things that we struggle with every day, things like violence, drug and alcohol addiction was rampant in those days, rampant. But it wasn't. Nobody talked about it because it was acceptable.
Well, and the time of Benjamin Franklin, cocaine was used recreationally, and it was even used in wine. There was a wine that was created, I think, in Italy, if I remember correctly, and it was or in Europe. I don't know that it was actually in Italy, but it was in Europe, and it actually had cocaine in it, and that mm-hmm. was like one of the first ways that cocaine was utilized was in this wine, and it was very popular until people started breaking down just the cocaine on itself and using it. And they used to have binge parties that went on for weeks. And at that time, cocaine wasn't illegal, and people didn't know how destructive it was to the mental faculties. But mm-hmm. one of the articles I read is that these high society people used to have cocaine parties that went on for weeks on end. I mean, it wouldn't be a day. You'd have people at mm-hmm. these mansions for weeks just completely messed up.
mm-hmm.
Well,
I mean, and that's not all that long ago. I mean, you're right now when you're talking about stuff like that, you're probably talking about as short a time ago in the realm of how much time we've been around. 40 years ago, it was commonplace to be invited to a high-end party and bowls of cocaine.
No. I'm talking about when it wasn't illegal. 40 years
yeah, I know. But I'm saying, even as short a time ago as 40 years ago, it was acceptable. I mean, it would be on the news. You know, somebody OD'd at a big shindig in Hollywood mm-hmm. with cocaine and stuff like that. And old movies now that we watch, when they finally pulled Rock Hudson out of the closet and told his story. I just watched that... that movie the other day, and then I watched the movie, I think it was Ben Affleck, who the story of Superman, when he became Superman. Did you ever watch that movie? That's a good movie.
Oh.
I can't remember what the name of it was, but he, he wanted to be a famous actor, and instead he, pranced around in a costume, so he was not real proud of being Superman, and yet he became, overnight sensation. But he was another one. And during those times, especially in Hollywood, again, it's, I guess the point I'm trying to make is nothing's changed. We look at things differently. The approval is not there of a lot of those things, but there's still issues, and there's still problems today.
Well, is that we celebrate, breaking away from British rule. And what people don't understand is that at the beginning of the 1900s, we went back under British rule from a monetary standpoint. And although I still think July 4th is a worthwhile holiday, I think it's something that we should celebrate. I think it's also a time for people to reflect and start researching the finances of this government. Just because I think it's better for people to be informed, I think it's very dangerous when the American population or any population of any government become complacent and just accept what they're hearing and seeing. But the Federal Reserve Bank, which is on all our money, right, you can pick up any dollar bill, and if you look at it, it doesn't say U.S. currency. It says Federal Reserve Note. And what a lot of Americans said, I didn't know this until 3 years ago until I started researching it, because the first time I heard it, I thought it was absurd. But the Federal Reserve Bank is not a U.S. bank. It's a London bank. So we are, because back in the early 1900s, the United States was actually going bankrupt. They took a huge loan from the Rothschild family, from London, which is where we originally came from, to bail us out. And in order to pay the loan back, they created these Federal Reserve Notes. So the taxes are actually going back to repay this loan. Now we have loans to China and stuff like that. So, I mean, the American higher-ups keep taking loans from other countries. So now we have this huge loan to China, where we've mortgaged California, believe it or not. I don't know how many people know that, but it's been in the news. And the Federal Reserve Bank is not a U.S. bank. It's a British bank. So from a financial standpoint, we're actually kind of back under British rule, which was what that whole war was about. So it doesn't mean that we're not a solid country. We are. But I think
American people need to not be sheep. They need to open their minds, and when they hear something, just not automatically dismiss it. I think this is a great country. I think that for all of our faults, we have more greatness. I think the American people have a lot of heart. I think there are more people that want to make things better. I think the American people is a real melting pot. We have so many cultures here that choose to come together, that actually leave other areas of the planet to come here, other countries to come here, because America is very unique as far as countries on the face of this planet. There's a lot of corruption here, unfortunately, because of our greatness. And I think it's up to the individuals to keep pushing forward to enhance the integrity of the United States, to take us a holiday like July 4th and have it reaffirm that we are a great country and that people have to be willing to keep their eyes open and keep an eye on the government and say, look, we're the people. You're supposed to be serving us, and we want things done correctly, and we want this explained, and we want the truth from our government. You know, if things happen that aren't all that great, fine. Let's move forward and fix it the best way we can, you know. But I don't think things like the fact that the Federal Reserve note is going to a London bank should be kept secret. And it really isn't, because if you start researching it, you can verify it. But it's something the government doesn't put out there. They don't allow it's like they hide things in plain sight, and they don't really explain to the American public what's going on. And it seems like only a select few who get, like, into the deeper workings find this stuff out, and then they try to let the American public know. So it's a great holiday, but I think it's a holiday that should instigate people to want to research our government a little bit more and make sure that the people that are acting on behalf of us stay on their toes and keep doing the right thing.
Well, see, but, well, you're asking everybody to be, you know, what we fight to be. You're asking everybody to be citizens. You're asking everybody to show some pride in what they are a part of and what they belong to. And, of course, that's a big part of what we talk about on this show.
That's a big part of this holiday. That's how it. Yes. That's how it all came about hundreds of years ago.
Exactly. It's all about taking pride in something that you're taking ownership of. And in order, I mean, it's like everything else. If you think something isn't yours, our makeup has a tendency to, like, not care about it. I mean, you know, it's a fact. We know some people that go on Sundays and clean up the beach, right? Why? Because they love the beach and they take some ownership of it. Those kind of little things are what it's supposed to be all about. It's pride of country, and it's pride of all the things that we've done to get where we are. And even though, like what you and I both just said, so many things are the same, the crime, the fraud, the ability to hide things in plain sight. I mean, that's a great acknowledgement that we know that, Shelley. And mm-hmm. And yet, in many cases, we don't feel like we can get involved in that. I mean, how many times have you heard somebody say, I don't vote because I'm just one person? A million times? Maybe
right.
A million times, right? And yet, you know, they're the people that, you know, are very boisterous about what's wrong. So it's kind of amusing when you think about it. Thank you, sweetie.
Yep.
It's kind of about, you know, you can find fault in something you're not going to even enter into or put your two cents into. I mean, gosh, it's kind of silly. Today, for me, is a celebration to be able to do what you want, purely and simply. I mean, if I want to celebrate today and shoot off firecrackers and have a big barbecue in my backyard and everything, I can do that. If I don't want to do that, I don't have to do that. And I think that's really what we're celebrating. And we talk about choice on this show every day in every kind of concept you can imagine. The choices that you make about your life, about your relationships with others, about your work, about what you believe in, what you don't believe in. I mean, how many choices do you make in a day, honey, without even thinking about it? How many think you make in a day?
I'm sure at least a dozen, if not more.
Oh, I would guess. I would guess much more than that. You know, especially if you break it right down to the simplistics of, do you want a cup of coffee? No, thanks. Or yes, please. Do you want to go to the store today? No, not really. Yeah, I would like to go. I mean, there's a million of them. There's a million of them. Mm-hmm. And days like today and Veterans Day and all of our really pertinent national holidays are in support of being able to do that every stinking day, as many times as you want to. And you can't let go of that. You can't forget that that's the truth. There are places in this world where you don't have that kind of freedom, plain and simple.
And it's important to realize that there were people really, really sometimes very brave, sometimes very smart, but always involved. There were people in our history that made that happen for us. When you look at the Declaration of Independence and you see the few number of people that were actually involved in that, I mean, they had community behind them, but the act of signing the Declaration of Independence was actually done by only a few people. I mean, look how many people signed it, you know? And so when you think of the power of one, when you think of the power of the individual, it's exemplified throughout history that always one person or a little grassroots effort, you know, like a half a dozen people went against an army of thousands and were victorious. Because when you're trying to do a good thing, when you're reaching for like a higher minded aspiration to help other people, to make things better, to make your community better, to make the world better, whatever, it's amazing how much power the individual has. And if nothing else, these particular holidays that we celebrate should bring that to mind and should make people realize their individual power and effect, and that you just making good choices, even if it's just affecting one other human, it doesn't have to affect thousands of people. If you can just impact one other human in a good way, well, my God, you've just made an incredible contribution that day, because everybody.
Absolutely, it
causes a ripple effect, and then that person is going to be inspired to do the same, and you just pay it forward from there. So it's very powerful to do good things, you know, without trying to sound funny, but it really is very powerful, more powerful than I think people give it credit for sometimes.
Well, and I think that selling yourself short when you do a few, I mean, here there's a fine line between, doing things for recognition and approval from others versus doing things because you know it's the right thing to do. And
good
I think,
point. Yep.
And I think a lot of times that line gets crossed and we get a little bit convoluted about why we're doing what we're doing.
Right.
But I think, you know, I think pulling yourself back in every now and then. I do that. I do things because I think other people think I should. And so I recognize it in others. And I would like to see more honest integrity like that, the kind of integrity that comes from doing things because you know that you should do them.
You're
trying to be noticed, you know.
Right. When you're doing something because it's the right thing to do, there's a different level of motivation behind it. And what I mean by that is that if you're doing something just simply because it's the right thing to do and you have that inner sense about it, even if you hit some conflict or some negative responses to it, you're still going to be motivated to move forward.
But if you're doing a thing because you think other people expect it of you, or you think you're going to get recognition from it, which is sometimes a driving force, and then you hit resistance, usually that's when people can't push past the resistance. They decide that, okay, well, I'm not going to push this anymore, and they stop. So it also gives you a different level of stick-to-itiveness, you know, so to speak, to be able to push through. So your motivation is very important, all right, and because just doing it for recognition is somewhat superficial, and we all do it. I've done it also. Sometimes I'll do something trying to look for recognition, or I'm trying to prove to somebody that I'm able to do something. And although that's not a bad thing to do, it's not the type of motivation that's going to be able to keep you steadfast in something and keep you pushing forward even when you hit conflict. You know, where if you're doing it just strictly because it's the right thing to do and you're trying to make a difference, you're going to have a much stronger sense of motivation to keep pushing through even when you hit some rough spots.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it also molds you into the kind of person that you really want to be, let's face it. I mean, you know, the more things you do that have some pure positivity, if that's a word, I think I may have made that up, but... If you do it with that in your heart, then it makes you a better person. It can't help but make you a better person. And when you're a better person, you're happier with yourself. Because, you know, so many people, and I've said this before, and I think it's worth saying again, so many people think other people are supposed to make them happy.
Right.
And so many people, you know, depend on the strength of another person in their life to make sure that they're happy, safe, having a good time, living a full life, all of the things that we all reach for, when in actuality, nothing changes. Nothing changes by other people's behavior towards you unless you change, unless you put in the effort, unless you put out the thoughts, unless you make the right choices. Nothing really changes because it just can't. Because it's a mindset, you know. It's about, you know, you could do cartwheels around my house with a red nose on, and if I'm not in a very good mood, you're not. I mean, I'm probably going to say, get the hell out of my house. You're driving me nuts. I'm in a bad space, and the only person that can lift me out of there is me.
That's
so
right.
So I don't want to get too far off of track, but I am proud myself to be a part of the United States of America. I don't take it lightly. I never have. I feel like anything you do where millions of people reap the benefits is something you should be incredibly proud of, even if all you do is one millionth of a millionth of a millionth of the outcome of what you have. It's still something you should take pride in. I read on Facebook all the time, so many people write such beautiful stuff, and so many people feel so strongly about our veterans. And then, of course, you know, you flip the page, and there was a story this morning, a veteran waiting for an ambulance succumbed at a VA hospital because no ambulance showed up. And, of course, everybody, that strikes such a horrible chord in everybody. But the truth of the matter is, you know, maybe it couldn't be helped. But they put out the story. They're like, you know, let's blame somebody.
Right.
Let's find a reason to get pissed at somebody. It's kind of what it is, you know.
And a lot of times the media,
we waste a lot of time doing that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times the media will put out stories like that because they're sensationalistic, and then when you finally get all the facts later on, you know, like on an inside page somewhere else, they update it, and you find out that, you know, that it couldn't be helped or whatever. You know, but they had that big sensationalistic story out there already. And like you said, what it does is it just builds up anger and disappointment in people. And sometimes it's truthful. Sometimes people made a bad decision, but a lot of times that's not the case. And now you have this negativity just hanging out there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it doesn't serve anybody. Doesn't serve anybody, not even a little bit. It's too late to help the veteran. It's too late to reprimand whoever was supposed to be in the ambulance. It's too late. So
yep.
instead of, you know, every time, for me, every time we can clean up the negativity that's like dirt on the floor, it serves
yep.
you. Every
well,
time
what I would like to
that.
Say, especially with today being July the 4th, and it really is a wonderful holiday for our country. It really does kind of bring up, pride in the United States. And like you said, it's a wonderful country to live in. But what I would like to see for the American citizens, for our country, is a lot of what we talk about on this show. I would like to see our country evolving into a kinder place where people just start having more respect and appreciation of each other, not tolerance. This has always been a pet peeve of mine, that we teach racial tolerance. I don't like that term, because when you tolerate somebody, it means they're doing something wrong and you're the bigger person and you're being tolerant. I don't think that we should be taught to tolerate the differences in others. I think we should be taught to appreciate it. So I would like to see the American citizenship, America as a whole, become people of higher integrity, higher kindness, and appreciation towards the melting pot that we've allowed to come into our walls, and to have genuine appreciation for the differences in other cultures, to embrace them, and really make this country stronger and greater than it ever was, because it's people have to start realizing that crime, hatred, violence are diminishing the power of the American public, the power of America as a country on the face of this planet. And the individual citizens, one at a time, the power of one, we can change that just by being kinder and more appreciative on our own. And we will inspire and impact the conduct of others around us. So we really do live in a great country, and I think it's up to the citizens to start making it greater.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with everything you just said. And of course, that's a very, very worthwhile endeavor for all of us to be who we want other people to be.
Mm-hmm.
Be what we picture as being the best friend you ever had, the best sister you ever had, the best spouse you ever had. You be that first. I think that's a very worthwhile endeavor. And imagine how beautiful everything could be if that really happened, if people thought about that instead of me trying to fix one of my kids, I just fix Rini. Instead of me trying to evaluate what's going on with one of my best friends, evaluate what's going on with Rini. So it's a big undertaking for most of us, and not near as easy as fixing someone else. But it
mm-hmm.
is certainly a wild endeavor, absolutely, hands down. So
it's very powerful to influence people gently, just by walking your own talk. You know, instead of trying to change that person, make those changes in yourself, and then when people see them in you and they start recognizing that you're happier, healthier, whatever, and it impresses them, that's a better way to inspire people, is by your own life, you know, by what you do, and then people see it work. You know, like they say, actions speak louder than words. You can give people all the advice you want, but when they see you do something and they see that it improves your life, that's much more powerful than any words you could say to them.
Yeah, I agree 100%. There was a commercial years ago, all I can remember is this little kid's face. I don't even remember what the commercial was about, but mom and dad were arguing, and you only saw the camera only showed you what the kid saw, and it would show the kid's face, and the sadness on their face and everything, watching something that was going on with the adults in the room. And I thought to myself, you know, we never think about that. We never, ever think about how we look to somebody else. Never.
Wow.
I mean, we think about how other people like us, think we're beautiful, think we have on nice clothes, like our car. All those things seem to take dominance over the really important issues, and that's how somebody, especially somebody who looks up to you for one reason or another, like a child, doesn't have to be yours, it can be any, but they don't have the ability to analyze what's going on when they watch your behavior. So they're only seeing it at face value. And
right.
There was also, many years ago, Disney put out a movie about everything from a baby's point of view. Do you remember that? How everybody's faces were huge, and you know, how many times grandma would pinch your cheeks and how annoying you found it to be, or how somebody's breath was so terrible. I'll never forget that. I wonder whatever happened to that. That was an awesome movie.
I never saw that, but it sounds hilarious. I mean, because, yeah, that's what a baby's world would look like. That's hilarious.
Or the big hand of somebody coming to your face, you know. And I thought, my God, I never thought about that. But you see, everything is a personal point of view, literally. So let's wish everybody a happy 4th, and please have fun safely. I have a little bit of innate fear about firecrackers and fireworks, not because of what happened to my grandson. It's never been I love the beauty of sparkling colors in the sky, especially the first time I saw fireworks over the ocean. I was incredibly impressed. And somebody sent me the grand finale from Ithaca last night on my phone, which was really beautiful. But please be careful. Every year somebody gets hurt. Every year.
Right, and then every year you hear these disastrous stories. So that's a good reminder. We don't want to make anything solemn. It's a beautiful, fun day. But, yeah, people have got to be careful with fireworks. Especially if you're going to be putting off fireworks near other people, especially children, make sure that everybody's safeguarded. Make sure people are away from where they're being set off. Enjoy the day and just make sure it's safe.
Yes. Yes, please. Yes, please. That's important. So you don't want to equate the 4th of July to a bad thing ever, you know. So
exactly.
It needs to be kept special. So Monday we talked about frustrations, and Shell wasn't with us that day, so yours truly did an hour-long monologue talking about the frustrations of waiting in line, the frustrations of not being able to get what you need in the moment you need it. I talked about doctor's offices, and I talked about the DMV, and I talked about waiting on the phone for FPNL or the cable company or the phone company. I really believe that a lot of the anger and angst that exists out there in our social world, our outside world, has to do with the frustrations of the hurry-up-and-wait syndrome. And I think that there's some things that could make that better if we just gave it some thought. So ironically, Tuesday, after I did the show, Tuesday I'm at Sylvester Cancer Clinic in Miami, and I've already talked about this, but I talk more than once about a bad thing, so I'm going to start changing how many times I tell the stories about good things. And this was awesome. After the show, on the show, I talked about whoever's managing an office in a doctor's office when there's 50 people there waiting and you're sitting there, your appointment was at 8:30, now it's 9:30, quarter to 10, and you haven't seen anybody come in and come out of the back office. And nobody says anything to you. And you walk up and you say to the girl at the front desk, you know, is there a problem? No, you know, it's just busy today. You'll be seen soon. You know, that's the kind of feedback you get. So on the show, I talked about what would be wrong, because a lot of times what's going on is the doctor isn't even there yet, especially that do cancer work, heart work, brain work. These kind of specialists get called into the hospital sometimes in the middle of the night. Baby doctor, there's another one. Well, he's out delivering a baby. You're not going to see him today. Why is it a secret? Why are you not? I said Monday, I said, why can't the office manager stand up and say, attention, folks, I know there's a lot of you in the room. I need to let you know that the doctor still has not arrived. I apologize. There was an emergency. If you'd like to leave and make another appointment, we understand. Why would that? Who would that hurt? And you could also say, if you have an emergency, come up to the desk, and we'll see if we can't find somebody else to see you. Right? I mean, imagine the blanket of protection that would fall over the waiting room. So, Tuesday,
and all the thing is that there are some, although they're few and far between, unfortunately, there are some offices that are handled like that, and it does keep you in a better place, and it keeps everybody in a better place.
Well, see, and you're right, there are some, because I found one Tuesday, and this office, we've only, Mike and I have been there twice, and of course the first time they saved Mike's life, so I'm a little bit enamored by everybody in that office for obvious reasons, and we're sitting there, we got there at 8:30 in the morning Tuesday. The ride from West Palm to Miami, for you folks that don't live around here, is, first of all, scary. You feel somewhat heroic after you make the journey. And it's always full of surprises. So I'm a little tense when I get there, but we're fine, you know. And we wait for maybe 10 minutes for Mike to be taken right in and see the doctor, which I applauded again. Well, when he first went in to get the, you know, his blood pressure and his temperature and all that stuff with the nurse, I waited in the waiting room. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching the tennis match, and I, right in front of my face, Shel, I mean directly in front of my face, is a dry erase board. And on it, it says, dear patients, today, you know, there's, we're under some this and that, and one of the doctors will be late. If you'd like to change your appointment because you may have a longer than usual waiting time, please come to the desk. I was so elated at that sign that I was like, I thought I was going to get teary-eyed, because I thought to myself, now see, how hard was that?
Exactly.
How hard was that? It was, and it made me feel much better. Now, I, because I just drove 2.5 hours to get there, I didn't want to leave anyway. But just having that sign written there kind of made my, the tenseness in my shoulders and my neck and everything kind of relax. Oh, that's the deal. Because we can have patients if we know they're really, it's really important to have them right now. If there's a good reason for you to have patients and realize that, you know, somebody else is in trouble, most of us are very forgiving about that. I thought that that sign was perfect. Plus that, at these hospitals, somebody is walking around constantly, PR for the hospitals. They're always dressed very nicely in navy blue suits, pants suits, skirt suits, whatever, and they'll walk up, and if you look like you're lost or if you look like you don't know what's going on, they walk up, is everything okay? Do you need my help? I'm pleasantly surprised about, and this is one of the biggest places in Florida. I mean, it's one of the biggest places in Florida. So the VA hospital, the Children's Hospital, Jackson Memorial itself, Ryder Trauma Center, Sylvester Cancer Clinic, Bausch & Lomb, I mean, they're all there within like a 6-block radius, and they're huge, huge hospitals. And when you walk up to the front desk, they all have beautiful, like, hotel lobbies. It's not medical-looking. It's like you've just walked into a nice hotel. And people immediately acknowledge that you're there. another pet peeve of mine is to walk up to somebody and not even have them lift their head up from their computer. Remember the day I threw the desks out of the Hippocrates store?
Oh, yes. That was great.
Well, that's a peeve. So I guess the point I'm making is sometimes if you're frustrated, if nobody's paying attention, who should take the bull by the horns in that situation, Shelley? What should you do?
Well, I mean, well, you should take the bull by the horn. And
right.
you should, you know, and you can be respectful, but you have to, you can't be timid and you don't want to be rude either, but you have to make yourself known and you have to demand some information. I mean, we've all been there. And there is a fine line between being insistent and rude. So, and it's important to try not to go to that point, not to let your anger take over, because the more angry you're acting, the more resistant you're going to get from the people you're trying to get help you, because they're already under stress, otherwise they wouldn't be ignoring you. They weren't trained properly, so they see you as, you know, more of an annoyance and like picking on them. So the more respectful you can be in a demanding way, the more of a chance that you'll actually be able to inspire these people to act more professionally, you know. But if you give in to your frustration and approach them, then what it is it's like mutual combat. They're going to be very resistant. They're not going to like the fact that you're acting annoyed with them and that kind of thing. So you're really only in control of yourself. So the better you can get a handle on your frustration or your anger and not act on it and say, okay, I'm getting frustrated, I'm waiting too long, I've got to get control of the situation, and just keep yourself as calm as you can and be as respectful as you can.
Absolutely. And whose choice is it to change that?
Yours.
Absolutely. That's really what we have to remember. And again, like what Shelley just said, it's the perfect scenario, but sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes you get met with with some obstinance or with some negativity or maybe even worse, some real aggression. But it still really doesn't have anything to do with you.
Right.
If you're doing what you know is the proper thing to do, that aggression is coming from somebody who's probably already had something negative happened to them today. So instead of taking that in and being upset by it or making it bring up your aggression, just say, you know what, you must be having a bad day. Is there somebody else I can talk to? I don't think anybody, you know, and you'll get the, sure, why not, go ahead. But that's okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Well,
then you just move and let that poor person who's already having a terrible day deal with their own stuff. You tried. And sometimes that's all we can do.
Right.
So
Today
we talked about addictions. And, of course, we talk about addictions a lot because addictions are one of our biggest tragedies human beings have. And addictions can be anything from drugs and alcohol, the obvious ones, to overeating, to not eating at all, to pornography, to sex, to gambling. I mean, I can't even imagine how many addictions you can have or be a part of. But what I do know is that if you can take an addiction and evaluate it, look at it, and get to a place where you can really see it like it's not in you. Like, hey, I don't know how you do this, but after the show the other day, I thought about this. I thought, wouldn't it be cool if we could take a picture of ourselves and look at it and remove the addictions, remove them, and have them not be a part of our lives anymore? First of all, which ones would you take away? Because some addictions, like somebody said to me, what's so bad about going every day to the soup kitchen? I won't miss it. I won't, I have to do it. Well, some people would say you're addicted to helping others. That's a good addiction. So far as I'm concerned, and worthwhile, and not just serves you, serves a whole bunch of other people, literally, right? So it's a good thing. So evaluating some of those kind of things is important. And I talked about Desert Rose, which I am incredibly excited about. And we had a big meeting yesterday, and we are going to do a grand opening, we hope, in August. And when we do that, some of you listeners that are local will be getting an invitation from yours truly. And I'd like for people to understand what it is we're going to do. We feel a little bit differently about taking somebody away from a lifestyle that they're obviously comfortable with but isn't good for them or anybody else in their life. So we feel like if you're going to take something away, you have to put something back in that space. So Desert Rose...
it is also important to realize what you were just talking about a minute ago, is that addiction and compulsion are really two different things. If you feel a pull, like you said, going and working at a soup kitchen, that's not really an addiction. That's more of a compulsion that's more based out of a desire to do something. Some compulsions are not good for us, but an addiction is where you don't feel normal unless you're doing this thing that's not good for you. You don't feel normal unless you take that drink or unless you're sitting at a casino gambling or if you're having sex 8 times a day. That's an addiction. Having a desire to participate in something because you feel like you're making a difference, that's a compulsion. It's really not an addiction. There is a difference between compulsive behavior, which sometimes can be good or bad, and addictive behavior. Addictive behavior is always destructive. People have to understand what the word is talking about. An addiction is when you have a need to do something to feel okay that's not healthy for you. So that's a very, very distinct thing that people have to understand. If you have a need to do something over and over and over again that's not bad for you, like working at a soup kitchen because you're making a difference, that's not an addiction. That might be compulsive, all right, even though it's a good thing. But an addiction, by definition, is having the need to do something to feel okay that you know is not good for you, regardless of what it is. That's an addiction.
Well, yeah, and I agree with it. But it's anything that you do with a continuum of precedence over everything else, even good. I'm using the word addiction because I think addiction means something that you continue to do without even any thought to it. Your definition of it rings very true to me, but I still feel like if you're addicted to watching television all day long, you hear people using that terminology all the time, although I feel that you're closer to being right on with the definitions. But I still think that anything that you do that takes precedence over everything else is a bit of an addiction. So, but I want everybody to know that we're almost out of time. We did a good Bully Buddy show this week and talked about, again, how many of the things we talk about out of the workbook apply to our adult lives. You don't have to be seventh grade to have to worry about bullying. A lot of times it happens in more often than anybody wants to know what happens. So it is a big thing, and it's something that that you need to know how to deal with. And I'm hoping that actually at Desert Rose we're going to have classes on bullying, because I believe a lot of the people that suffer in that arena is because they've always been made to feel less than who they are in their lifetime. So bullying is probably a part of their history. So, but I want to wish everybody a great day today and have a lot of fun, whatever you're doing. A lot of people here in Florida out on boats, and they're really, really clamping down on what you're doing out on your boat. So please be careful with that, too. We don't want that. But go out and have a great time. Spend it with family and people that you love, and we'll be back Monday. God bless everybody. Thanks, Shel.
Thanks, Reen. God bless everyone. Have a wonderful 4th of July, a wonderful weekend, and we'll speak to you on Monday.